Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to another Happy Pod, the only podcast in the world. My name is Nathan. I'm joined by my co-host Lawrence, and he's going to tell us what this show is all about. So why don't you do that now, you big ugly cunt?
Oh, no, come on. That's not fair at all. Nathan, I don't like it, but I'm going to have to say it. This is the show where each week we get together to discuss something in the realm of pop culture. It could be a movie, it could be a telly show, it could be a video game, but the main thing is that we do so without of the top. But the main thing is that we do so without any of the toxic discourse that is oh so prevalent these days.
Flawless execution.
Thank you. Well, it was because I'd cut it. Okay, right?
Yes.
That makes it sound like a big mistake. I professionally stopped and then I started again. You know what? I'm leaving it in. They can hear it.
Great. Well done. Lawrence, what has been going on?
Wait, life in general? What, like politics? What are you asking me?
Well, I've been tirelessly at work on putting up our YouTube channel. So I've been bringing that back from the dead. And that is launching this coming Monday.
Okay.
You know this. What are you like, oh, really?
I'm giving you a platform to be like, no, oh, because like, it's boring if I'm like, yeah, it is. Like, I'm the audience surrogate. Right,
but it's less boring if you're like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. Wow.
I'm the shocked audience surrogate, Nathan. I'm wow. I'm umming and ahhing along.
You might as well be shocked with how much you had to do with it. it's not strictly another Happy Pod YouTube channel. It's another Happy Studios, which is our like podcast network sort of thing. So yeah, you'll be able to find both this podcast, Still Got Legs, and we will possibly be doing some YouTube exclusives up there as well. Just some fun little videos from time to time. Not gonna lie, they probably will mainly be Still Got Legs focused, but we'll see what we can do for this piece of shit as well. We'll throw something in here.
we'll throw you guys a bone if we have to.
We'll throw you a bone every once in a while. Hopefully by now the back catalog should be fully uploaded. Oh, I say that tentatively. At the time of recording, I've still got a bit. Well, all have still got legs to do, but I hopefully should get that done by the time this goes up. But
you're mostly done with this podcast, though.
Yeah, this one's mostly finished. But then I got that podcast. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, so that's youtube.com/anotherhappystudios, I guess. There'll be a link. So
I'll put it in the description of this episode. So go and get yourself subscribed, but maybe wait till Monday. Otherwise, your recommendations are going to be fucked.
No, they won't. Why would they be fucked?
Because of mass uploads for Still Got Legs.
Why would that affect their recommendations?
Oh, no, because it will come up in their sub feeds, won't it?
Yeah, that's not their recommendations, though, is it?
Oh, I'm an old man. I don't know how this stuff works.
This is
will be somewhere on your homepage.
This is literally your job. This is literally what you get paid to do, Lawrence.
I get paid to edit videos. I don't get paid to look at YouTube. That's not my job.
You don't go fucking... whatever. You should know how YouTube works if it's your job, you dickhead.
YouTube isn't my job. When YouTube cut me a check, I'll learn how recommendations works.
YouTube is basically your job. Where do all the videos you edit go?
Not all of them.
Where do most of the videos you edit go?
All right, you got me there. It's YouTube. Okay. Fine.
So there you go.
Nathan, how are you?
Tired.
You sleepy boy.
I just watched a 3-hour fucking movie.
Oh no, I'm worried about this. Are we getting cross Nathan? Are we getting bitter Nathan? Are we getting excited Nathan? What Nathan are we getting?
Definitely not getting excited Nathan. What the fuck now?
You should be overjoyed to do the podcast, Nathan.
I always enjoy doing the podcast, Lawrence. I don't know. Well, we'll talk about this.
Are you deflated from the sheer gravitas and weight of the moral quandaries you're left to ponder after watching Oppenheimer by Christopher Nolan?
I'm deflated from watching an okay movie which goes on way too long with terribly written female characters and
oh, I'm gonna hate this. And, I'm gonna hate this so much.
And a premise that... well, we'll get into it.
Is this gonna be an after sun? Do I have it in me to listen to you talk about Oppenheimer?
Well, you're gonna, regardless. So
I know, but...
It doesn't really matter.
Am I gonna go to bed miserable?
No, I hated After Sun. I don't hate this. I don't like it, but...
I swear you used to like it. We briefly touched on it in Barbie.
It has... Yeah, I think I was caught up in the cinematic experience of it, because...
Okay.
Watching it at home when, you know, I'm not deafened by the speakers, and the sound mixing is once again bad because I don't have a full surround system like they do in the cinemas.
I was fine with it. We have the same telly.
All right, great. Well, I wasn't. There's less to distract me from the story and the Nolanisms of it all. And I think I'm starting to realize that I just don't like Nolan's style. It's just, I just don't think he's for me, really. And I like Interstellar a lot. I think Interstellar's like his outsider, I think, because it's like his most normal movie.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. The Oppenheimer is one of the movies where it's like, it's Nolan on like
drugs,
crack,
acid,
yeah,
cocaine.
Yeah, it's Nolan as he's ever been.
It's too much Nolan.
Oh, see, that's. I mean, I guess. Look, we found the which way Western man moment. You either like Nolan or you don't, and if you don't like it, then this movie is definitely not one for people that don't like him.
And I don't think I do. I think I'm just starting to realize that now.
How many Nolan movies has it taken you to understand this, to get this impression?
Quite a few. Hated Tenet. Dunkirk, didn't like.
What don't you like about Dunkirk? Is like, Dunkirk's one of the movies that it just can't put a foot wrong for me. Like, it's inoffensive. No, but like, what I'm saying is like, there's no plot stuff to be like, I hate this. It's all form. It's all direction. It's all, there's real planes in the sky, which all looks cool.
Can you name a single woman in Dunkirk?
Nathan.
But no,
that is not just the be all and end all.
No, I know it's not, but it's a factor, and it's a factor for me.
Yeah, and me. I'm not saying he's perfect by a long shot. Okay. I just, look.
But can you answer that question without saying the nurse who didn't have a name?
No, I mean, I don't even remember the nurse, exactly. So I take your point.
So...
I'm still allowed to like Dunker, all right?
You can. I'm not saying you can't, all right? I'm just pointing out something which,
okay,
you know, it's a factor of his movies. Okay,
I do agree. I agree.
And boy, is it a factor of this one.
Ah, see, I don't agree there. I think Emily Blunt and Florence Pugh are great in this, and
agreed.
I understand that there is limitations on their screen time. I get that entirely. But there's other stars that there have limitations.
Not
as
my
well.
Issue. All. Not my issue. All.
Okay, I'm curious to get there, but let's not jump straight in yet.
Tenet, seen it, bad. This, seen it, it's fine. Dunkirk, seen it, bad.
It's not bad, right? Stop just saying bad.
For me, this is my personal opinion.
All right, fine.
This is my personal subjective opinion, all right?
Okay, okay. Yes.
Interstellar, great, loved it. Have a good time with it, one of my favourite movies, genuinely is. Inception, bad. Memento, funny, but not good.
Okay.
No, not Memento. Haven't seen Memento, sorry. I meant Wizard Fight.
Wizards.
Yeah.
Wizard Fight. Wizard, Prestige. Wizard, yeah.
Yeah. Prestige. 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 Yeah. Yeah. Funny, but not good.
I can see where you're coming from with that one.
Yeah.
I thought, for a second there, I thought you had one of the all-time craziest reads on Memento, and I was just prepared to get on board to hear that.
No, I haven't seen Memento, and to be honest, I'm scared too.
Before we delve into any of that, let us discuss Barbenheimer.
Okay, I guess.
No, we already touched on it in Barbie, obviously, but I do think that this movie, like, it's... I think you said it, and I think you said it best when you said that it... that they need to cut Barbie a check. Right,
like Chris Nolan needs to write Margot Robbie and Greg Gerwig a very big thank you letter, okay?
Yes,
because ain't no way this was getting to what, like 800 million or whatever the fuck it made without the help of Barbenheimer. Not a chance was this doing.
I've heard people say that it's like it would have made money, and yes, it would have made some money. It would not have even kissed a billion. That's like. No. That's impossible for without, like, everyone's dad going to see this and everyone going to see it after they saw Barbie. Because, like, Barbie was the audience pool. It's impossible to ask, like, well, firstly, it's 3 hours long. There's only so many times you can show it a day.
Yeah.
And secondly...
And it's not as good as Barbie.
Nathan, will I just get you to be impartial for 1 minute, all right?
I'm just saying... It's not as well directed as my girl Greg Gerwig's masterpiece. That is Barbie.
I think it's better directed.
Those are fighting words.
No, they're not fighting words. I think largely people would agree it's a better directed movie. I'm not saying I dislike Barbie at all. I love Barbie.
But no, I guess we'll never know.
I guess. Well, no, we will. Hang on. All right, look, it's... I love to see... And this is tricky, right? Because Warner Brothers... Chris Nolan used to work exclusively with Warner Brothers. Then they dicked him around with the Tenet release.
Fuck Warner Bros.
Yeah. And then Nolan was like, I'm going to go to Universal. And I wrote down, and I'm only now realizing how wrong it is, I love to see Warner Brothers lose, and I hate to see Universal win. But really, they Warner both Bros. Won.
In what sense did Warner Brothers lose? They put
out imagine if they put out both of these. Like,
if they did, they want to put them out on the same weekend, so Barbenheimer wouldn't have been the thing. Barbenheimer was only a thing because the release dates were the same, and they were like, oh, look at these two movies that are complete polar opposites. Wouldn't that be fun to all do this?
Apparently, there was a studio exec on Universal side as well that was like, we need to move Oppenheimer, and like, thank God that didn't happen.
Yeah. That'd have been like the stupidest decision you could have ever made.
Well, that's the thing, but like this has never happened before. Like, moving it would be a sensible choice, but the fact that they didn't allowed for this, and that's like, it's not even a gamble because they weren't expecting it and the studio had no involvement. Like, this is clearly just happened for some reason out of nowhere.
I think it's a really beautiful thing. It shows the power that the people have, really.
Yeah.
It's one of those moments where I think studios should look at that and be scared, because they should think it wasn't some marketing campaign that fucking decided to spend $800 million to go see fucking Oppenheimer and Barbie, all right?
Yeah.
It wasn't some high executive pulling out these release date plans or anything like that. It was some prick on Twitter who noticed that the release date were the same and went, oh, wouldn't this be funny? And then everyone went... That would be funny. Let's do it. I'm in. All right. And then we all decided to go, except you, because you didn't take part. but we all decided to go to Barbenheimer.
I saw him close enough together.
No, all right. You didn't take part. If it's not the same day, it does not count.
I
went from screen to screen, Lawrence. All right.
Oh, and you wouldn't shut up about it either.
Yeah, well.
Oh, my gosh.
You had a fucking nice rest in between.
Yeah.
Like a little piss baby.
When in fresh, that's what I say. It's fucking insane. And I love that, like, the lesson they should take from it is, like, word of mouth is fucking powerful. Like, for better or for worse. But the lesson they actually took from it was, oh, what do you guys think of Saw Patrol? And everyone was like, shut the fuck up immediately.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Will they ever learn to do the right thing?
No, they won't. They won't.
Nathan, this is nominated for 13 Oscars, if you can believe it.
13 too many.
No, that's not true. You must know that that's not true.
No, I'm being facetious.
Stop being hyperbolic.
But I also, I don't know. I have issues with the Oscars as a whole.
Awards are meaningless. The only thing I like them for is the fact that they actually can push people into spaces, like new talent. Like,
and Chris Nolan in his little indie movie in Oppenheimer, $200 million budget. Little Chris and this humble little project that he worked on, you know? They really need this big boost to get it seen and to get out there, don't they?
No, but what I will say is it will have that effect for someone who was not a small name before this by any means, and box office track records should speak for itself, but people are going to very much enjoy saying Oscar-nominated Greta Gerwig. And people are going to want to say, like, if she wins, like, for screenwriting.
She's nominated for screenwriting.
Yeah,
sorry.
But, like, that's going to make, firstly, that's going to send her rates through the roof and also make her an attractive choice and pretty much give her the pick of the lot of whatever she wants to work on. Like, it does afford people creative freedom once they have that label attached to them, which I disagree with, but I can't disparage how it helps, in a way. Should we just jump into it? Where do you want to start with Oppenheimer?
I don't.
Nathan, for fuck's sake. Don't make me pull teeth for this, please.
All right.
Even if you hate it, talk.
The runtime. It's too long.
Disagree. Show you're working.
It's 3 hours. That's my fucking working. All right.
Titanic is one of your favorite movies, is it?
Yes,
not?
Yes. And 3 hours. But Titanic justifies its runtime.
I think this absolutely justifies its runtime.
It justifies its runtime up until about 1:45. And then
you're insane. What? So you're saying the Trinity test shouldn't have been in the movie?
Oh, sorry, I didn't know the exact fucking time code of the Trinity test, Lawrence. Sorry, I haven't studied the fucking time codes of this movie. What I'm saying
it's a very clear three-act structure.
It should end with the Trinity test.
Okay. If I read you a quote, are you going to cry?
Probably.
Okay, well, we'll prepare. The movie starts with the phrase, with the quote, "Prometheus stole fire from the gods and gave it to man. For this, he was chained to a rock and tortured for eternity." What is your understanding of this quote and how it relates to the movie? Why is it up the top?
Am I in school? Are you framing me up to be a dumb cunt who doesn't understand movies?
No, I will be making a point, but I'm not saying that at all.
Okay.
This is my antithesis for why I disagree that this movie shouldn't be 3 hours long. "Prometheus stole fire from the gods and gave it to man. For this, he was chained to a rock and tortured for eternity." So why is that quote at the top of the movie?
Because it's Oppenheimer, and it's like he made the big bomb and he felt bad about it.
Yeah, and when he was tortured for eternity, he's obviously, that's not just himself. He was chained to a rock. That's an act of someone else putting him on a trial for it, right?
So you're saying that we are tortured for eternity because we have to watch this movie?
What I'm saying is the movie is not about, it's called Oppenheimer, it's not called the Manhattan Project, it's not called Trinity Test. It's about the making of the bomb, yes, but then it's also about how people reconcile with that and how once you give man that power, man can easily take it away from someone and warp it and change it into something that was, you know, to say it was unintended for that purpose is ridiculous, and that comes under the character of Oppenheimer. But my point is, if you cut the third hour out of this, which I think you've said, would you?
Yeah. I'm not
that's
talking
the judgment
just,
gone.
No, hold on. I'm not talking just cleanly and then do nothing else. I'm obviously, you'd fucking take some at the beginning, some in the middle, and fucking some here and there. All right,
you're
I'm
talking
not
about
just
condensing
saying,
it all.
Yes, I'm not just saying cleanly lob off the last hour and make no other changes. Because obviously that would
so
be
what's
fucking
the fat
stupid.
You'd cut?
All the Senate Robert Downey Jr. bullshit. Unneeded.
But that's all of him being tried. That's the manipulation of man chaining Prometheus to the rock.
All right, open the movie with another quote then. All right?
But that's not what he's trying to do.
But I don't care. All right?
I don't like 3 hour movies. The movie's wrong for this. Not me.
Yeah. Yeah. What I'm saying is, all right, I know what the fucking movie's about, all right? I'm saying it would be better served and would be a better movie, in my opinion, if it was solely about the Manhattan Project and wasn't focusing on fucking the Senate hearing, which I have quite a lot of issues with as well, because it's a movie about fucking Oppenheimer, the father of the atomic bomb, which was dropped on Japan twice, okay? And it's all about how he's sad. And then there's a Senate hearing about some other guy. And we never once focus on the actual devastation of the bomb. We get, like, fucking bits of it, but it's actually just about Senate hearings and how it made this one guy sad, which is a bit... It's like that fucking meme, which is, like... Oh, that meme, which is... It says something along the lines of, like, America is wild because they'll invade your country and then make a movie about how sad it made their soldiers.
Yeah, I take your point.
And it's the same thing, you know?
I do see where you're coming from, but like the movie's not pro-bomb. Like, it makes the very clear...
No, it's not.
This is... Like, I know what you're saying about, like, oh, it makes American soldiers feel sad, and that's, like, the thing. And, like, oh, poor fucking Oppenheimer, didn't he suffer? And I don't think... that. Like, I'm not at the end feeling sorry for Oppenheimer. It's Oppenheimer's a character, and a real person, presumably, if the film is 100% true to life, that is a conflicted man, but I think honestly should be condemned and should have been treated the way he was treated. But that doesn't make the military... like infrastructure that treated him poorly also right. They're all wrong. Everyone in this movie that had a hand to play in the development of the bomb sucks. And at the end of the movie, when they say we've started a chain reaction, I think we did. That's not like it that's not a hooray moment. And like,
I don't take it as a hooray moment at all.
No, but my point being, like, I think it made the point that you're saying. I don't need to see fucking Hiroshima and Nagasaki fucking blown up on IMAX to understand that point. Like, I think it's crazy to say for a 3-hour movie, but it's subtle. It's about the conversations. It's about like the twisting of the knife, and it's about how this is like it makes everything you're saying, I think, is summed up in that scene where they wipe off a city in Japan because of its cultural significance, but also because he honeymooned with his wife there. That it does make that point, I think.
I guess it does, but it makes it through the lens of white men in a boardroom.
Yeah, being idiots.
But not the actual people it affected.
Yeah, because they weren't policymakers or change makers.
Exactly.
Like this is a blunt thing to say, obviously.
But we're seeing it through this lens and not the lens of the people it was actually affected. That's my issue with it. If we saw it through the lens of the people who actually affected and could have some sympathy for them, you know, then then I might feel differently.
Okay, I can't talk to your interpretation of it. I'm just like... things that I've like read on it, like the fucking like hearing Nolan talk about it, he does treat Oppenheimer with this kind of reverence of his importance to history, because whether good or bad, he was a fucking enormously influential figure in our history. But he never once doesn't condemn it. Like, he never once says, and I'm not saying you're saying this, but like, he's never on the side of it. He's never saying, I want people to see him as a sympathetic character. He's saying, it's all laid bare, right? He's treated like shit, yes, because he's a shit person. But then the people that treat him like shit are also shit people. There's no winner in this scenario. Like, it's just this devastating thing that happened in the world.
I just think it's weird in a movie about the fucking the creation of the atom bomb and the Manhattan Project and the destruction of Nagasaki and Hiroshima for the main conflict to be about some petty squabble between Robert Downey Jr. and Oppenheimer. Because that's ultimately what it boils down to.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's one man's fucking inability to let some fucking comment that Oppenheimer made go. And because of that, he thinks like he's ruined his life or whatever. And that's ultimately what that whole Senate shit comes down to.
Yeah,
And it just seems so unimportant. It just seems so pathetic to me that like
this is the main
fucking like obstacle to overcome of the movie.
But
you can say that's the point, but that doesn't make it good. That doesn't mean I have to like it. No, I think that's a bad choice to make personally.
Look, fair enough. I can't tell you to like it, but I'm just saying I think the reason it works in spite of that for me is because you don't like, if we were to see some perspective from Nagasaki and from Hiroshima and the victims of the tragedies, like that's not surprising to me. That's going to be like,
and well, it's surprising to see an unrelated squabble.
No, it's let surprising. Me finish. Let good. Me no, you're misreading my point, because you cut in. Like, it's not... like, if I were to see their reactions, be like, we didn't like getting bombed. Yeah, I know. Like, I get that. Like, no one would. And I totally take that point. I think they go for a deeper approach, which is no one needs to be told or shown that the bomb was bad. The second it goes off, the voiceover comes over that he has become death, destroyer of worlds, right? That big famous quote, right? The bomb is never once shown as this thing of beauty. It's shown as the second it's been built, it's shown the immediate scene that follows is this, the bomb being carted off and taken away. And then the control spiraling out of Oppenheimer's hands. And this bomb becomes one of the most terrifying things that could happen. And in the hands of such idiots, it makes the case for this was a fucking needless tragedy. The war was virtually won. There was no reason for this bomb to be dropped, let alone for it to be dropped twice. And it's the for them to make the point that it's the sheer display of power that is necessary speaks to the hubris and the American ego of we needed to do this. But the point you walk away from the movie is you didn't need to do this. And it was meaningless and it meant nothing. The only thing it did do was inspire an arms race that has forever had the world on the back foot and paranoid of a nuclear war.
But like what does that have to do with Robert Downey Jr.? Because this is what I don't understand. All the shit with Robert Downey Jr. seems so fucking unrelated to everything, like what you're saying about the nuclear arms race and the fact that Japan were on the brink of surrender and this was a fucking completely unnecessary thing to do, okay? Because I agree with all that and I fully understand all that. And I'm like, yeah, if the movie actually focused on that, I'd be with it. But instead, we're going back and forth for this petty squabble with fucking Robert Downey Jr. and Alden Ehrenreich and Rami Malek showing up out of nowhere to be like, well, fucking, I've got some tea. Here's this, cunts. And then it just seems like fucking in a movie about, I don't know, and it seems like we have a nice steak meal, okay? Yeah. And here's some jelly to pour on top of it. I like jelly.
What's the jelly? I misunderstand
the
metaphor.
The jelly is the Senate hearing shit, all right?
Okay, the ending all hour. Right?
Yes, yes. Not exactly, but yes.
No, I get your point, yeah.
Yes. I'm saying that, like, they just don't go. And I don't see the connection between the two. Because what you're saying about, like, fucking, again, the arms race and everything like that, fully on board with all that shit. It's just the Robert Downey Jr. stuff. And great performance, I'll agree. Great performance, but like, what's he got to do with it? What's he got to do with the nuclear arms race? With Oppenheimer's hands in destroying Nagasaki and fucking Hiroshima and all that sort of stuff?
I can see your point because it does come across as slightly disconnected from like the larger thesis. And one of my problems with this movie is that I think you walk away from this movie being like, if you love the direction of it, that's great, but it doesn't say much other than condemn a nuclear bomb, which I've always condemned anyway. That's not something I think is cool. But for me, the RDJ inclusion and like the hearings, it shows this like the level of pettiness that they spend more time on a clearance hearing than any single one of them does thinking about anything else. And like RDJ is as hypocritical as he said. You know, he has this big speech of, you know, he never once said he was sorry for Hiroshima or Nagasaki. But like he doesn't care. It's performative because he doesn't care about that. He just cares that he was publicly humiliated by a man that he sees as hypocritical because he, you know, built the A-bomb and then refused to take part in the H-bomb. And it's all, he never once apologized for it. Fucking Oppenheimer doesn't want to admit that he was wrong, but he feels this deep kind of conflict. And I think like the juxtaposition between the small, tiny fucking box hearing for the clearance and then the big Senate, not trial, but the big Senate hearing for RDJ's job appointment, like it's all speaks to the pettiness of that military infrastructure that is just like, yeah, we'll spend fucking days, hours and resources on this, but like none of us give a shit about why it happened.
I think that's my issue. In a movie about fucking, and in a story which is real and actually happened and hundreds of thousands of lives were lost because of this, why am I focusing on this petty squabble? And if it's to tell me that fucking the American government is inefficient and it's petty, like, I mean, come on, you already knew that. But like,
no, and that, like I said, that is one of my problems with the movie. Like, I don't take that from the third hour of it, but like I just said, walking away from the movie, I did want, first time and the times I've seen it since, right, I've always had the same complaint of like, didn't tell me much more than I already knew. Like, it was interesting to see the very true-to-life events of Oppenheimer's life and the lead-up. Like, it's a good historical piece that tells me largely the truth of what happened.
See, the link to me is Oppenheimer. And that's the only link I can see between, like, everything that happened. It's the movie's called Oppenheimer. It goes from Oppenheimer at a young age to, you know, a relatively older age. And it's just a biopic about Oppenheimer's life. And I think therein lies the issue. Rather than taking one specific aspect, the most famous aspect about Oppenheimer's life and focusing on that, Nolan wanted to extend it out and have the Trinity test and the Manhattan Project, but then also have later stages of what came after that with these hearings and shit. And for me, it's weaker because of it. I would much rather have had a more focused movie on the Manhattan Project, and it could have been shorter, could have been tighter, could have had better, you know, written female characters. But again,
look, this is nothing new. The third hour, like, is divisive. Like, people, it's seemingly Marmite, like, in you love it or you hate it. And I happen to really like it. I think the third hour is where, and not just for story, because I do take on some of what you're saying. The third hour for me is where Nolan just fucking goes ridiculous on his direction. He tightens it down. It's when the music is at its best, I think. RDJ.
Oh, God, the music. Oh, fucking hell.
You don't like this score?
It's relentless. My God.
That's
I think this is another way I'm learning. I'm just not gelling with Nolan's style. He can't just let a scene sit. He can't just let dialogue happen without this fucking swell of music in the background, which is so jarring and deafening that you cannot understand what's going on. And it almost feels chaotic at times because, like, very rare is it in this movie to have a scene where people are just allowed to talk and there's no music or anything else going on. It's always, like, scenes which are very intercut with other stuff and lots of swelling music going on. And it's, like, three different scenes going on at once. And I'm like, fucking hell, it's sensitivity overload. It's not very autism friendly, is what I'm saying.
Look, I get it. I do get it, right? Because one of my first fucking notes that I wrote down, and I wrote this like 5 minutes in.
I think the first half an hour is so difficult to follow. I don't have a clue what's going on for quite a while in this movie.
I don't find it difficult to follow, but I've seen it more than you have.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember how I first felt watching. I think the first viewing, I came out of it being like, Jesus Christ.
It's very overwhelming and very chaotic. Yeah. And there's a lot to it, I think.
We spoke recently about, like, certain points in movies that, like, I think we spoke about it on the Creator episode. But, like, there are certain times in movies that you just go, like, oh, hell yeah, that's fucking cool, right? And, like, if you gel with Nolan's style like I do, for me, this is a three-hour version of that moment. Like, the way that this moves and the pace on it and how unrelenting it is, it's very much like you're on this train for 3 hours. You can get off if you want, but we're going. Having seen it a few more times, it definitely benefits from... I liked it a lot more on the second watch.
How many times have you seen it?
Today was my fourth time seeing it.
Fucking hell.
And I've... I put this on my little Letterboxd review, right? But there's Oscar re-releases that are happening. I've already booked my fifth viewing in to see it at the cinema again.
I'll be perfectly happy if I never watch this movie again.
Look, it's not, like I said, it's not for everyone. And I get Nolan has this way about his filmmaking that is like, if it's not for you, then it's really not for you. Like, because it's so abrasive and, like you say, kind of this assault on the senses. But no, I think with that being said, I do think it, like, it's not, this isn't an easy thing to do. Like, it's...
I'm not saying it is.
Yeah, it's, like, the skill on it, and this is why I kind of said about the direction, like, this is, you need such a fucking steady hand to make this. It's insane how layered this is. And also, like, I haven't finished the book by any means. I'm not even a quarter through it. But, like, the book it's adapting is fucking dense. Like, it is not just in, like, width. I mean, like, reading it, you finish a chapter and you're like, fucking hell. Okay, that's a lot.
I don't get the black and white thing.
I don't like this. This is... Okay. If we're going to get on board about anything, it'll be this.
It seems completely fucking random, all right? It just seems like, oh, I'm going to make a fucking art house movie and so I'll have scenes in black and white because isn't that artistic or whatever?
We always will disagree on that point. Because I know, right, but just because I've, like, by nature, if I've read a lot of his fucking interviews he's done on this and listened to him speak on it, I think what he goes for, he misses the mark on completely. Okay. I think when you have black and white in a movie, for better or for worse, general audiences at least, have come to expect that means flashback. that's typically what that conveys to an audience. And when you're dealing already with a movie that is told in like fleeting chronological moments and things are out of order and things are constantly cutting backwards and forwards.
Another issue I have.
Oh, see, that, but that's the style.
But that's, it's, again, relentless because it doesn't make any of it clear.
I think it does. I mean, Cillian Murphy looks either really young or really old. It's pretty apparent.
He looks mostly the same throughout the movie.
He's got different haircuts.
No, he's wearing a hat for most of it, Lawrence, all right? It's only at the end when he's like an old man, you're like, oh, this is obviously a little bit later. Other than that, he's mostly the same, apart from when he's a young boy and he's got his curls or whatever as well.
But it's set in clear rooms. Like if he's in the hearing room... He's an older version of him. If he's working on the Manhattan Project, it's obviously pre-Manhattan Project.
Yes, those, clear. Okay, I get that. But then we also have, like, fucking... There's, like, scenes, with Robert Downey. Like, he goes to... At the beginning, when he goes to, like, first work with Robert Downey Jr., where he goes to work with Strauss, and they have a meeting or whatever. And then we see them later, like, working, like, a big table with everyone, which I'm like, so this is later on down the line? But again, they don't make that clear. They just jump straight back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah, I will say those are the two hardest to decipher, but I just pick that up from their location.
Put a fucking title card on there. Just fucking say where it is. It's really not that hard. It's Nolan's insistence on, like, fucking... I got my issues with him. Whatever. Go on.
Look, you can't disparage a man for doing what he thinks is cool. Like, you can say it should have been done a different way, but by that point, it's just a different movie.
Yeah.
Look, Black and White, the idea and the intention behind it, which I think it misses, is that Black and White, you know, that's Black and White. That's objective. That's supposed to be how...
See, I heard this. I thought about that while I was watching the movie, but then I'm like, but this that doesn't hold up though, because
because different perspectives see things objectively and subjectively.
Obviously the Senate hearings, black and white. This is objective. There's a record of it. I get that. That makes sense. But then you get scenes where it's just two people in a room talking, and again in black and white, and like there's no record of this. How is this like this is objective fact or whatever and stuff? And then vice versa, the same thing goes again. Like.
No, I agree.
And then sometimes they do a scene in black and white and then again in color. The same scene.
That is seemingly the difference in perspective. Like the sandwich scene, the scene where he, like, Oppenheimer embarrasses Strauss in the hearing and is like, oh, you could do this with a sandwich. In fact, you do. Like that scene. That's
shown about black the one and white. Where, like, they tell Oppenheimer that he's getting his security clearance.
When he's at the house with Borden and Strauss. The first time they do that, they show that from Strauss's perspective and then Oppenheimer's. Like, it's supposed
and it,
to be...
It was like 30 seconds later that they show it from Oppenheimer's perspective as well, by the way.
No, look, this is the only part of the movie you'll get me to admit that I think is over-stylized for no reason. I think Nolan has a clear intention of what he's going for, but when you overwhelm the movie this much, I didn't grasp any of what the color intention was until I read it, and then I watched it again having read it, and I was like, yeah, I would never have got that if you didn't tell me that. That's just something that wouldn't have stood out to me. That's the part of the movie I feel is over-designed, and that's, funnily enough, it's the part that Nolan is least versed in. I don't mind his style at all watching this, but he's never tried something like that before. And I think for him, it was probably an experiment that missed. At least that's how I took it anyway.
Well, good for him for trying.
God, I thought you liked this movie a little bit more than this. I feel you're very Debbie Downer.
I like moments of this movie, all right? I like sequences, but...
Would it physically pain you to tell me what you like about this movie? Just for the sake of levity.
No, I really enjoy... again, this was mostly when I was at the cinema, but the sound design of it was very good. The Trinity sequence was great. Really enjoyed the Trinity test sequence and stuff. And I think Cillian Murphy does a good performance, somewhat stunted, but I know that's kind of the point.
What do you mean by stunted?
There's not much to him, you know? He's a little wooden, but he's supposed to be, you know?
Oh, like the playing the character that is meek and mild, yeah.
Yes, yeah, the character of Oppenheimer is a little wooden, and you know, he's not like, well, hey, you know, and everything like this. You know,
and that would be very strange if he was.
And it would, yes, it would.
Check out this bomb, lads. Well, hey.
Yes. Robert Downey Jr. gives a great performance. There are great performances all throughout it.
I think it's an incredible performance from Cillian Murphy, but like, it takes a lot to be to stand out with your performance when it is that subdued. Like, people walked away from this and obviously went, oh, RDJ is incredible, because he's the loud one. He's the one that shouts and, you know, says a few swear words, and that sticks with people as performance. Often people equate louder equals better. And I'm not saying it was bad. It was great.
I've abandoned my child.
Yeah, that's it, right?
I've abandoned my boy.
But that's it. People go, oh, he shouted. That was great.
That's great. Let's give him an Oscar, because he shouted.
That's what acting is. Yeah.
Get your paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
But that's like, and I do think the Oscars is changing that slightly. Like, the two front runners for the best actor Oscar this year are Cillian Murphy. No, not you. Cillian Murphy and Paul Giamatti, both of which have subdued performances in their films respectively.
What did Paul Giamatti do?
He did The Holdovers, which is, I only just saw it a couple of days ago. It's fucking brilliant. Cool. So good.
No one cares. Move on.
Why'd you ask? I think sometimes people listen to this and be like, Nathan sounds insufferable to talk to.
I didn't ask about The Holdovers. I didn't ask your opinion on the movie, though.
Most people, when you bring something up in a conversation, most people allow at least a sentence of leeway.
Not me.
Yeah, I know, yeah. For someone that talks about fucking trimming the fat, I can see why you like it. You're like, streamline the fuck out of this. Let's get done. Yeah. All right, you said you don't like the mute. Right. Do you... You don't like how ever-present the score is, but the music itself, you have... It's incredible.
Don't tell me I have to like anything. You know how petty I get, right?
Yes, I do. I really do. All right. What is your opinion on the quality of the music?
It's fine.
Oh,
it's nothing special. A downgrade, I think, in terms of going from Hans Zimmer to Ludwig Göransson?
I think so. Göransson? Yeah, Göransson? I would say that, yeah.
Yeah. Ludwig is a talented composer. I don't know if he was the right choice for this movie. I think in a partnership which has worked out so well in the past, that of Nolan and Hans, I don't understand the choice to move away from that.
Well, he's been away from him for a while. I think
he
didn't. Yeah, he didn't do Tenet. Tenet wasn't Hans Zimmer either.
Could not tell you a single song in Tenet.
No, come on. You don't like the Freeport? I
could not. I've blocked most of that movie out from my memory.
Oh, man. Tenet's got some really memorable bangers. But Lauren, you've seen it once, right?
I saw it once in 2020, and I hated it, Lawrence. So I haven't really gone back and checked it out, if I'm being honest with you.
You're not very inquisitive, are you? You watch something once, and you're like, that's fucked forever. That's dumb. I hate it for good.
I could say the exact same thing about you with things you don't like.
It's fair, yeah. Look, Ludwig Göransson, for me, I think he's perfect for this, right? Because like his the stuff that the big hitters that he's done recently.
He's not got a flute. He's not got a big flute.
That doesn't matter. You don't need big flutes.
He does a big flute.
Oh, he does a big flute. Okay.
He does a big flute and he goes ooh.
Yes, he does do that. Actually,
we all know what he's about.
I forgot he did The Mandalorian.
That's all I know him from.
No, you know him from Black Panther and from. Well,
he didn't do Black Panther.
Okay, he did, but that's fine. You're just thinking of Kendrick Lamar, who did the soundtrack.
Did he do Black Panther?
Yeah, he scored Black Panther, yeah.
I thought Kendrick Lamar scored Black Panther.
You thought Kendrick Lamar scored Black Panther? Composer Kendrick Lamar.
No, that's a joke. I thought it would have been Giacchino or someone, but all right. No.
He did Creed, which you will get to see.
Never.
Well, no. he did Tenet as well. No, look, I think he's the perfect choice for this, right? Because the music... It is this. It bounces constantly between showing the horror of what's happened, but also viewing it how Oppenheimer sees it, at least in the first 2 hours of the movie, which is the creation of I think it's said in the movie like 3 decades of fucking physics, right? Like it's the creation that he looks at the Picasso painting and it's like he's looking at the world in a new way, and the music reflects that, and it's very inquisitive and beautiful and, yes, heavily included in the movie.
There's no Interstellar.
No, but it's going for something completely different to Interstellar. Like, I don't think I like the pairing of Nolan and Hans Zimmer, but I think Ludwig's work is, for my money, more memorable recently. Obviously, Interstellar is a fucking enormous score that is lovely.
Hans is one of the greatest, Lawrence.
I'm not saying he's not one of the greats. I'm just saying there's room for a couple of greats. Ludwig isn't bad because he's not Hans Zimmer. He's very talented.
I'm not saying he's bad.
You said his work's forgettable and like, come on.
I don't know if I said his work's forgettable.
You said something to that effect. You don't remember a single like song from this or something.
I said I didn't remember anything from Tenet.
That's Ludwig.
Yeah. I didn't say this. I remember stuff from this.
All right. So you don't like how much it's in the movie?
I'm largely indifferent about the score, if I'm being honest.
It's one of my favourite parts.
It's fine, I guess. It's no Interstellar. Interstellar score hits different, man. The Interstellar score is like fucking, it's so good. That one of the all-time greatest scores right there. And pairs so well with a movie. Fucking the docking sequence, are you kidding me? Oh, so good, man.
Look, I don't disagree. You know I don't disagree. But I think the music, like how it's used here is, it's on a movie that is so fucking quickly edited and smashes you through this 3-hour story at a breakneck pace. Like it's the music is the driving force behind it. And like, I could count on like fucking one hand. I wouldn't even need the whole hand to count the amount of scenes in this movie that don't have a score backing it. And for some, like you said yourself, that's jarring and ever present and a bit irritating. But for me, I'm like, I don't know, man. It's just like certain worlds of filmmaking meet, and just if I'm seeing something that looks great on screen, a performance that's good, with visuals that are lovely, and then it's being like handed to me with this incredible score, like that to me is just more things coming together. And I get that that's overwhelming, like for some people that don't like the style, but I love it.
All right, great. Moving on. I've heard
there's that impossible to talk to part again.
You made your point. Did you have anything else more to say on the score?
No, I wanted to hear your thoughts.
I have nothing else to say on the score. You know my thoughts.
Fine.
It's no Interstellar. That's my thoughts. All right.
Moving on, Nathan. Jesus, stop getting wrapped up in this stuff, all right?
Interstellar score is better. I'd much rather listen to that. I don't know if I've heard Nolan say this, but I've heard people say that apparently this movie has no VFX whatsoever.
Right, yeah. This is a quote that got run away with.
All right, tell me about this.
So you've absolutely heard that, because that's been said in the...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Truest sense of the word, which are there are no 100% visual shots in this. Okay. There are things filmed practically enhanced with CGI, which is what Nolan actually said in the interview.
Okay, because I was going to call bull fucking shit on that one.
Massive bullshit. Yes, yeah, okay. Obviously. Nolan put the fucking atomic bomb out there.
Yeah.
No, that was one of them classic, I'm not going to talk about superheroes. Breaking news, Chris Nolan doesn't want to talk about superheroes. That was a media effort to basically make Nolan look like a bit of a fool. And look, I like Nolan, but he does make enough of a fool of himself. He doesn't need help.
He doesn't need much help with that one.
No, like, and look, people have this opinion, and we've said it before, largely a lot of people's views of Nolan are just made up. He's always painted as this, like, no, you have said this exact thing before, that you know pretty much nothing about the man.
He doesn't help himself, though, does he?
In everything I've seen from him directly, it speaks cohesively and he makes sense. When he's taken out of context with a quote like that, that makes him look like this. I love practical effects. VFX artists are stupid and dumb and I don't need them, which is not him at all.
Didn't Robert Downey Jr. recently say that, like, Nolan told him that, like, his career was in the toilet or some shit?
I think this was a joke. Like,
okay.
You know RDJ.
Yeah.
Yeah. Personally,
we're good friends.
Yeah, exactly. I can't imagine a single world where two friends, Nolan and RDJ, got together and Nolan went, you need me. And that worked for multi-millionaire Robert Downey Jr. And this is what I'm saying, right? He gets a bad rap because people have it in the back of their minds that Nolan is this, like...
film robot.
Yeah, which he's not. He's genuinely a cool guy from the public perception I have seen of him. People do rag on him. But no, what you're referencing is...
He doesn't like chairs.
He doesn't like women. Chairs.
And he hates women.
But this is what I mean, right?
He doesn't like chairs or women. That we know about him.
He loves his wife big time. All right.
The chairs was confirmed as well.
Robert
Downey Jr. confirmed. All right, the chairs is confirmed.
This is the part I'm saying where he's good enough at making himself look like an idiot.
And he hates women.
And for fuck's sake, we'll get there, Nathan.
Okay.
No, the thing you're talking about is he said there were no 100% VFX shots in the movie, which is true. Everything. Even the effects of, like, Cillian Murphy looking into space and there being, like, a weird light, that's all, like, stuff that he... I don't know how he did it, but he did it with some weird shit in camera.
You can do shit like that. And like, water diluting effects and lights and stuff. There's ways to do it, but I'm calling bullshit. I've been 100% impractical, in-camera practical shots all the time because...
Yeah, because that's nonsense. No, that's not true. Yeah.
There's just no way. Yeah.
It's just flat. The fact that people even went, like, the people even took that and went, like, Well, he shouldn't have done that then. I'm like, why do you believe this? This is so obviously not true.
I do think Nolan doesn't help himself with, again, the like, seeing himself as above VFX sort of stuff. Like,
I don't think he's ever said that. That's the image people have.
But he doesn't help himself with that image, though, because he does, like, strive to include, like, as little of it as possible in his movies. Like... It seems like it is very much a field that he doesn't respect or care for. And, like, you wanting to do stuff practically, like, that's good. More stuff practical is absolutely fucking great. That's great. But it does seem a lot of time that he, like, looks down his nose on, like, VFX and stuff when actually it's just a very useful tool that can be used well in movie making.
But, like, and I get that. And he doesn't help himself. But, like his movies, like, it's clear as, like, Interstellar, Inception, like, even Tenet, it's stuff that, like, you look at it and you go, that can't be practical. So, like, when people have this opinion of him, I just don't understand it, because, like, watching his movies, you go,
for me it's stuff like insisting on, like, fucking buying an actual plane and destroying a building with it rather than just doing it with VFX and shit.
He has, and I get that, like, but it's not, at the end of the day, the director does reserve a right to do the film how they want to do the film.
100%. And I reserve the right to think it's dumb.
I know, and that's fine. And there are a lot of things he does go overboard on, which I think are unnecessary to do.
Yeah.
Like, there's tiny details he spends hours fucking lording over, going, how will I do that? When it's like, the answer's there, man. Like, it's a couple of people at a computer will do that for you, no problem. But, like, there are things that, like, again, I'm biased because Dunkirk's one of my favorites, but, like, shooting in, like, actual fucking World War II planes, and, like, he has spoken at length about why one of the things he gets out of his job is problem solving. Like, he likes being a director to make films, obviously, but one of the components of being a director he enjoys so much is figuring it out and going, how will I achieve that? And, like, trying to push that boundary. And the thing with it is, I think he uses VFX to a very suitable degree. I think he goes overboard on practicality sometimes, but he doesn't not include VFX. It's just he likes practical effects, and he prefers on the day to capture stuff in camera. And the fact that he's spoken so openly about how he likes practical effects has made people go, well, then you hate VFX. And he's like, that's not true. I use them just sparingly because I prefer one to the other. But when you say people look down on him, that's because his words get taken out of context a lot of the time, I think.
He didn't solve that problem of using the wrong flag in the...
Where were you doing? Where are you going?
He used the wrong flag in the... In the sequence where, like, everyone was like, yeah, we won or whatever.
I like how I just said all of that and you're like, well, he got something wrong. Fuck him, I still win.
I'm just saying. Solve problems. He didn't solve that one, did he?
I guess not. All right, while we're on that scene specifically, what do you make of that? I'm giving a small rally speech.
Yeah, it's a good scene. It's a good scene. It's well done. Mm. Again, though, this is the extent of, like... It does go back to like the issue of like no perspective from the Japanese, because this is really the extent of it in the movie.
What I like about this scene is that it's like the director Nolan literally directs the Trinity test, right? Like an insane feat to pull off, right? This melding of like practical visual effects, the scoring, the editing of it all, like it's one of the climax points of the movie that it's been building up to for 2 hours, right? And then like you follow it up with like a small rally speech scene, and that scene for me beats the Trinity test. Like it's such a flex of being like, I don't know, like the camera trickery to pull off the moving background while he had like a panic attack, the swapping out the cheers of excitement from the crowd for like cries of pain. He's in his mind, he's already imagining the American public as if they were the victims, watching them cheer with a complete disregard for the amount of people that have just died. I don't know. For me, it's like an excellent shift in perspective for Cillian Murphy's character to have, that the movie is about to suddenly take us down this route of this whole movie. We've been telling you this is an American hero for making this bomb, and we're very swiftly about to change course and tell you why this is terrible. And I think that scene embodies that really well.
I feel like anyone with half a brain would already know it's terrible.
Yeah, but I've already said that's one of my problems with the movie, but certain movies, they don't need to say something. Like some things can just be fucking cool and like well made, and like it's the reason I like that scene so much is the directorial skill on show. Like it's just very, very well crafted as a piece.
It's a good scene.
It's a good scene. I like the scene. All right, I want to bring up another criticism, which I think you'll agree with, based on some stuff you've already said.
Probably.
I don't even know if this is a criticism. I go back and forth on whether I like the editing in this movie.
No, I don't.
Yeah, because it's breakneck, right?
Like, yeah, it's too much. It's overwhelming. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want to talk about like the structure of it, because like the editor can't help the script. Like the way that the script is written is the way that it's written. So the sequence edited, that, like an editor's job is not deciphering the order of a movie. It can be, but not in this case. I don't know. I'm always kind of back and forth on it. It's constantly cutting. Nothing is really given breathing room appropriately.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you have these incredible performances, and while I don't think the editing kneecaps them, I think giving them certain amount of breathing space would also not be a bad thing.
It's in that it's mostly a gif these days, but the scene from, I don't know, one of the Taken movies where Liam Neeson climbs a fence.
And it's Taken like, 3, I know it well.
Yeah, and he cuts like 14 times or some shit as he climbs over this fence.
Yeah.
That, it's like that, basically. It's just too much. It's an assault on the senses.
I get what you're saying. I don't, like, this is not... The thing is, the cuts in this, they work for the pace of the movie. That scene in Taken 3, that's just bad. That's just, we filmed it from 30 angles, have all 30. That's the mark of a bad editor that doesn't know when to cut something out. Like, whereas this, like, either way you slice it, stylistically it works. There's not ever a cut where you go, ah, and you get that moment of like, that looks wrong. In Taken 3, the jump over the fence looks wrong because it's 30 angles of the same movement and it's too much coverage. Whereas stylistically, I think the editor does a great job making this work, because it very easily in different hands might not work. I'm just torn whether I like the style in that aspect. Sometimes I love it, and sometimes I'm like, oh, Cillian Murphy was really doing something there with his eyes. I want to watch that a bit longer before you move me on. So I don't know. I go back and forth on it, but you're not a fan, though.
No, too much.
Fair enough. What are your problems with the female characters in the movie? What do you not like about their inclusion? Or that sounds wrong, like I'm setting you up as a sexist. You get what I'm saying.
No, Nolan is the sexist.
No, he's not sexist. Go on. All right. I'm going to be quiet. You go
for it. He could have fooled me, Lawrence. He genuinely could have fooled me. All right?
Okay.
I think he hates women. I think that's clear from his movies.
He doesn't... you must know that he doesn't openly hate women.
He doesn't seem to like them. He doesn't seem to like or respect them very much. Considering he never gives them anything to do in his movies other than service the main character.
I think I know where you're going with this, but do tell. Go on.
Anyway, Florence Pugh. Good performance. Largely irrelevant. Maybe she was killed. Maybe she wasn't. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. I don't know either. It's ambiguous, yeah.
All right, great. Out of the two, Emily Blunt is the better written character, I think.
Yeah.
It's still incredibly slim pickings, though. Still, like, the best of, like, two piles of shit, though, you know? Because, okay. Like, there's just... I mean, like, it's such a disservice to this real life person, and I don't know how fucking accurate this story is. It could all be bullshit for all I know. But like, if I take the movie at what it's saying to me, that this is all real, this is all fucking factual. Okay,
yeah.
Here we have a woman who was clearly an intelligent person, got with Oppenheimer. They started this relationship, had a family, and then clearly she's suffering from postnatal depression.
Yeah.
Are we going to explore that? Nah, don't worry about it. Let's just completely ignore that and not touch on it all. Let's just not really touch on her alcoholism, apart from every now and then she'll be like, oh, let's have a martini, or oh, this place needs a saloon, oh, look, here's my flask. Anyway, let's move on and not address this any further.
Yeah.
And then the one scene she gets in the movie to kind of be like, look how cool I am. It's all about Oppenheimer. It's all in service of protecting her husband. She has no agency. Mm. Everything she does is just to serve Oppenheimer. There is nothing in this movie that she does for herself. And I get that the movie's called Oppenheimer, okay?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It just seems a disservice to this real life person who very clearly had her own life, like, very much outside of the man she married, and that's not her whole entire life, personality, everything she lives and breathes, you know? Mm. It's bad to me. It's just such a fucking disservice, I think. And especially when you have Emily Blunt, who already, she does give a great performance, but it could have been so much better if she actually had good stuff to work with rather than looking forlornly while she took down sheets and occasionally would say, let's have a drink, you know? Yeah,
I do see your point. I get, because, and like I said, that is one of the flaws of the movie. I think that there are... You're absolutely right in an Oppenheimer movie.
And it's not just the flaw of this movie. You know?
No, but it's something to condense the conversation, let's talk about
it. It's something that can be tracked throughout his filmography, is all I'm saying, okay?
All right. Look, what I'll say is I agree in some respects and disagree in others. I think that there are...
Tell me where you disagree. I'm interested.
Okay, so where I disagree is in, like, that cool scene... And it is a very well acted and cool scene. The scene where she's like, "Oh no, 18," and like she purposely dicks around with the lawyer,
mm-hmm.
To fluster him and put him on the back foot for a change. I think this could have been explored more. It's not perfect at all. But what I like that it's going for is that she is the muscle behind a very passive Oppenheimer. She sees through him as this. Ever since she found out about the Gene Tatlock thing and the affair, she's seen through him as this coward. The man who runs away from his problem. Literally runs away to the woods to go and hide from
Wouldn't
his
it be
problems.
Great if we explored that a little bit?
But I think this scene does explore that, and I get this that it's
one
scene a
scene.
Yeah,
in
I
a
get
three-hour
Nathan,
movie.
I get it, I get it. I'm
exactly.
agreeing with you.
This is my point though.
Right, but hear mine.
Right, go on.
Because I don't disagree with you. I just think that it's not fully in service of a man. Yes, she's at a hearing for Oppenheimer. I get that.
Mm.
But it's she's the muscle behind him. She's the straight-talking person that... She's the own of all of the room of men that have... Like, we see men get carted in and out of this room, and they speak plainly and they speak honestly about their experiences with Oppenheimer, but bottom line is, they always give the lawyer ammunition to use against Oppenheimer. Even Matt Damon's character, who speaks the fondest of him, he's handed a rule of guidelines and goes, I wouldn't you know, class any of these guys as suitable, but I wouldn't class Oppenheimer as well. And that's a friendly smile to Oppenheimer, but the lawyer can use that to be like, well, this guy doesn't think he's suitable. They all give the lawyer power, whereas Emily Blunt is the only person that gets him on the back foot and acts as this, if my husband is a coward and won't fight, I'll fight on his behalf. And she calls them out on their idiocy, throwing like fucking glasses across the room, and they're all going like, you're all debating this stupidity. You all know that this is Strauss's pettiness. Like, there's no, I don't know, like, for me, her character was underexplored, and there are facets of her character that I would have loved to have seen be more included in the movie. I don't think it's a big ask to have Oppenheimer's wife appear more as a prominent character in the Oppenheimer movie. Totally take that on. I think to say all of her scenes are just in service of a man, like, it also does Emily Blunt a disservice, I think. Like, she's developed this character with what little she has been given and turned in a performance that many people are saying is Oscar-worthy for really predominantly two scenes.
I think it's a great performance. I'm not disagreeing with that whatsoever. Yeah. I think Emily Blunt did a fucking amazing job. I think she could have done an even better job had the character actually had some depth, in my opinion. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
I just don't see it that way. I think it was wholly in service of a man. It was wholly in service of Oppenheimer. Because that whole...
But
like,
wouldn't Oppenheimer's wife as a character act in service of Oppenheimer in that scene scenario?
Yeah, but she can do more than that, though. Her whole life is not just Oppenheimer, you know? Mm. Again, the whole thing, like postnatal depression, alcoholism, these are all stuff that's brought up in the movie, but then it's just like, here it is. Fuck off, see you later. We don't need it, you know?
It's this passing comment of like, this happened, but don't worry about it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. The same thing happens with fucking Florence Pugh. Like, right at the beginning of the movie, where like, they meet and they have sex. And now she's madly in love with him and calling him on the phone, but like, she doesn't want to talk to him. But we don't see that. Don't worry about it. We'll just hear about it once and then never again. And he'll bring her flowers, but she doesn't like him. But don't worry about it, you know? It's just a passing thing of like, we hear these things about the women in the movie. We hear these details. We get given tiny snippets of information, but we're never actually shown much more beyond that. We're never actually shown what it means, other than what it means to Oppenheimer, which is very little.
Like, Kitty Oppenheimer's life, as much as I can gather from, again, what little I've read of the book, right? But like, hearing Emily Blunt talk about it and stuff, she is a very accomplished woman. She's a biologist. She's a scientist in her own right. She's obviously...
Not a single sense of that in the movie.
Yeah, but that's the thing. She says it, and these are the things that... You know, look, at the end of the day, she's married to someone who has literally garnered the nickname the father of the atomic bomb. What I think the film does is put her in Oppenheimer's shadow. What I think the film should do is explore how she feels in that shadow. And the film does one thing, because it's practical and Nolan is very much about moving forward and going, this happened. If it doesn't directly service my story, then we're moving on.
And he hates women.
Nathan, stop. You get these moments. You've got Albert Einstein in it. He appears.
Einstein has more depth than Oppenheimer's wife in this movie. Isn't that fucking insane? Isn't that insane?
I take your point, but like, it was... The science is based off of what Albert Einstein did with the theory of relativity. Like,
no, that's fucking insane, man.
I take your point, but I think you are being hyperbolic a little bit there. Look,
I'm not the one who hates women.
I can't remember if we've ever spoken about this. I have vague memories of us maybe mentioning it once. Where are you at on what people classes like? People have often said, this is the most offensive scene in the movie. And while I agree that the women, there is something left desired about like how they should be more fleshed out. People talk about the Florence Pugh straddling Cillian Murphy scene as like offensive.
It's not offensive in any way.
Yeah, I'm glad we agree.
The intention behind that is very clear.
Yeah.
It's very clearly a moment of Emily Blunt, you know, she knew about the affair, but having it re-brought up and having to... Have her like, you know, her laundry laid bare in front of everyone is
on the record forever.
Exactly, it's very much a, you know, that kind of a moment, and having her be visibly uncomfortable with having to relive these memories that she has and having to relive the fact that her husband was unfaithful to her. It makes sense that we'd see that at that moment.
I agree, and it's also there's also this nice, not nice, but there's also this quality of it where. It's, you know, it's also a very exposing thing to read onto the record for admittedly long dead Jean Tatlock by this point, right? But like, she's also
Who's
having
Jean
her
Jean Tatlock.
That's Florence Pugh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But that's also like having her laundry laid bare, and also like even the positioning, because Nolan doesn't do sex scenes very much.
And let's all thank the Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a regular occurrence. Okay?
And I agree, right? I don't think it's his strong suit. But like, this was a very clear intention for me to show Florence Pugh's character straddling Oppenheimer, because the people in that room, all the security board members, right? That's all they see Jean Tatlock as, not as this, you know, tortured woman in her own right. Literally, they see her as a leech straddling Oppenheimer to, you know, pry away at him, get information as a communist spy. They don't see her as a woman with emotions and feelings and, you know, this intimate bond that she kind of presumed she had with Oppenheimer, but Oppenheimer's a dog and you can't put a man down, he says.
He is a dog. There was one point in the movie when they just brought up, like, this other woman, apparently, that he's been having an affair with the whole time. And then
do you not get that,
like,
sense? He was flirting with her the whole movie.
All right, first of all, she showed up, like, twice, okay? Again,
she's in the movie, like, 20 times in little scenes.
Nolan hates women. She's in it twice, all right?
Nathan, you're wrong.
But then he's just like, yeah, I am having an affair, but let's not talk about that right now. Like, okay.
He's a dog, man.
He's a cunt is what he is.
He is. Yeah, he's a dog.
Now I know when Nolan idolises him.
For fuck's sake.
Yes, Daddy Oppenheimer.
There's this paradoxical nature of it, which is like, the movie sets it up, that's the whole point of Oppenheimer's character. He flip-flops on his decisions. He's indecisive. He makes a bomb, then doesn't want to make a bomb because he doesn't want the arms race to happen, but he started the arms race by making the bomb. Like, it's one of the first things he says to a student.
He shouldn't have made the bomb.
Yeah, he shouldn't have made the bomb.
Should have made the bomb.
But there is this paradoxical nature. He says, you know, how does this thing work at the same time this does? It's paradoxical. It doesn't work, yet it does. And the film does continue that theme. Like, he refuses to lie under oath in a hearing, but then breaks the oath that he makes to his wife. He designs the atom bomb, but discourages the hydrogen bomb. Like, and then despite the fact that he worked on it with Teller, or at least in theory, spoke about it. Yeah, my point is, he often does something and says the opposite. Like, it's... I like it. I like that as a character trait for him, because it doesn't make sense and you can't really read his intention. And it's this person who kind of... He is treated as this kind of character that floats above everyone else. And because he is so intelligent, operates on like a higher plane to all of them, which just makes him look like what he is, which is a fucking egotistical prick who views himself as this, like, striving for success god, and then goes, oh, I didn't like it. I didn't like that I did that. I feel bad. Feel bad for me. I'm not going to fight on trial so that the world can see that I am self-reflective and I have regrets. But then he never publicly regrets them because he doesn't want to shun his own work because he feels too much pride in it. Like, I don't know. I like all of that stuff. I think it's very nuanced and subtle. And it would have been very easy to walk in and just show Oppenheimer as an egotistical prick. Nolan does write him as a fully fleshed out character, which is more interesting. Even if it makes you go, I'd like this character less, it's way more interesting to watch than if Oppenheimer was black and white, I suck, straight away.
I do like Jack Quaid and his bongos.
There's loads of little people that just appear in this, aren't there?
Little people?
No, fuck's sake. No, but like, you got Josh Peck. He even said, like, Rami Malek shows up and he's
what
like...
What is Josh Peck doing here, man?
He's not bad in it. I know he only presses a button.
He's in, like, fucking once. He's in, like, two scenes. He's, like, hugging a chair at one point. And then he's, like, suddenly in charge of, like, fucking pressing the big red button or some shit, man.
And he doesn't even get to press it.
And he doesn't even say Megan.
No, I know. Why didn't he say Megan?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's where it went wrong. If it said Megan, is this a 5-star for you?
No.
Okay, fair enough. All right, yeah. I don't know. Who was your favourite little weirdo that just popped up?
Jack Quaid.
And his bongos. Yeah. Yeah, good little bongos. Who else shows up in this, just out of nowhere?
There's one woman on the team who shows up and they're like, oh, you've got to get out of here because it might fuck up your reproductive organs. You can't be on this team.
I do like how come back to that, which is like, presumably you are more exposed, like just by nature of what we both know. All right, what else have you got to say?
I think it's fine. I don't want to watch it again. I think it's way too long. cut out all the fucking Senate bullshit and then just call it the fucking Manhattan Project. End it with a Trinity test secret. End it with that fucking, that sequence when he's like giving the speech after the Trinity test, after the bombing or whatever.
Mm.
End it with a fucking Truman telling him to wipe his hands in. Fuck it, I don't care.
Do you want to talk about the MCU suit up and the Kennedy tease for the post credits?
The Kennedy tease was so fucking stupid, man. Oh my God. It implies that Robert Downey Jr. is somehow behind the assassination of Kennedy. It's so fucking stupid.
No, it doesn't.
He does, man. This guy's all about fucking payback and like getting his own way. And then
you're reading
like,
wildly too much into this.
No,
they literally went. It was just a reference of, yeah, JFK actually was one of the people historically that voted against him getting this job. And they just went, oh, JFK, like it was nothing. It then didn't cut to Robert Downey Jr. being like, oh, well, I'll better get in touch with Lee Harvey Oswald then.
No, they 100%. The fucking Nolan knew what he was doing, man. They had RDJ specifically ask what his name was because we know at this point he's all about getting payback. He's a petty guy who cannot let hold. He cannot let go of a grudge. He's going to hold onto it. He's going to let it fester.
But, like, there were three people voted against him. Like,
but he only asked for one, and they only gave him one name. And whose name was it? And what happened to that one name?
I don't think Nolan has stuck true to life on these events that are very well documented in history and then gone, at the end, by the way, this character that I've worked really hard on bringing into the light, he's also going to kill JFK. I made that bit up, lol. What do you guys think?
Like, that's what it seems like he's saying. That's why he's nuts.
That is, there is no way
I'm
that that
nuts.
Is implied.
He's nuts.
There's no way that is implied.
He's 100% implied.
I have seen so many opinions of that, and it is dumb. And I'm not saying it's a great line. I think it's a silly line.
So even outside of that, though, it's so fucking stupid. He literally reads like fucking Nick Fury looking out of a window with his back to the camera, like fucking saying like, you think you're the only superhero in the world? Like, it's so fucking stupid, man.
I think the stupider one is the suit up. I think that, you know, you're a scientist, Oppie. Dress like a scientist, and then you get the
suit up is pretty fucking dumb. It's nowhere near as dumb as JFK.
I think you're genuinely insane if you think that's, like, about Strauss killing fucking JFK.
There's a young superhero trying to make his name for himself. They call him Spider-Man. It's literally the same thing, man, you know?
Have you, at risk of making you extremely cross, because I feel like if you're not already set off, this will set you off. Have you heard on a specific read on the ending of this movie about how it might be a larger meta? I don't agree with this. I think people are reaching way too far. And I feel like
the ending's pretty clear.
No, but like this kind of meta-textual element of like...
Go on.
Basically, people are seeing the RDJ casting and knowing knowing that Nolan obviously not, and this is where I think people get it wrong, popularized a certain caliber of superhero movies. You know, 2008, the year of Iron Man, the year of Batman, both of these were mega hits, fucking Dark Knight specifically. Superhero movies had been going for a while up until this point, but not to this scale. Like 2008 was the year it boomed, and it became a thing.
It wasn't the year it boomed. It was the beginning.
It was the beginning. Yeah,
but it wasn't the year it boomed.
Oh no, but it set the course.
I would argue that wasn't until like 2014, roughly.
No, 2012 was the Avengers. Yeah, MCU had been going for a while up to then.
Yeah, but I don't think it was until. And Guardians was the boom point for me.
Do you reckon? Guardians was already the success. Guardians wouldn't have succeeded without there being a boom prior. No one was tuning into Guardians of the Galaxy.
It was the fact that people tuned into it, which proved there was a boom for me.
I see that point, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, the read on this, which I think is moronic, is people read Chris Nolan as this Oppenheimer figure, looking at the creation of the Dark Knight, regretting his hand in the shift in the industry that has happened because of the superhero boom.
I completely forgot Nolan did the Dark Knight. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
I've been we even talked about Nolan movie. I completely forgot he did those.
Yeah.
That in my head, that was just someone else entirely. Oh my God. of course he did. Sorry, go on.
And with the casting of Robert Downey Jr., it's very much... So people take it very much as a, like, this I'm making a comment on my relationship to superhero movies and my regret in popularizing them to the extent where now they are this oppressive force in movie making industry. I don't agree with this. I'm just telling you something I read.
I like the idea of Nolan making a $200 million 3-hour movie all about the creation of the atom bomb and Oppenheimer just to say I shouldn't have made Batman that one time.
Yeah.
Or those three times or whatever.
I deeply regret the movie that made me the god that studios revere so much. I hate the fact that I became so popular and my career boomed after this.
That's so fucking dumb.
Yeah, it's a very, very silly little thing. Right, any little things? Anything to finish off on?
No.
No. Are you happier you rewatched this?
It made me realize I like it a lot less. So
I mean, I'm glad it's put you at peace. Now I'm wishing you never watched it again so that we could talk about this with you fondly.
Hey. It's fine. Cut an hour off and it will be a better movie. And also give the women something to do.
I don't disagree with the second one. I disagree wholly on the first one.
You hate women, though, so...
That's the one I agree with.
No, you and Nolan hate women.
Last little thing I'll say is Alden Ehrenreich.
Han Solo.
Going toe-to-toe with RDJ. That's good stuff.
Yeah, Han Solo.
Underappreciated, my mans.
He's a good actor.
He is a very good actor. And that leads me on to something, Nathan. It's the time of the show that we talk about recommendations.
I love recommending things, Lawrence.
I know you do, Nathan. And when we recommend stuff, it could be something we've watched, read, or listened to, or experienced, just anything we've done in the past week that we'd love to share with the lovely, loyal listeners and each other. Nathan, go ahead. I know you're going to throw it back.
Yeah, throw it back.
Nice. All right, cool. I just had to do that. Fair Play, a movie starring Phoebe Denver, who is the girl from Bridgerton, who is very good, and Alden Ehrenreich.
Never heard of him.
Phoebe Denver, Alden Ehrenreich. It's a movie on Netflix, came out last year. It's basically about a couple...
Netflix?
Yes, Nathan, Netflix.
Wow.
I know. It's a couple who work in finance in this very, like, fucking New York dog-eat-dog, horrible corporate world.
Why are the dogs eating dogs?
I don't know, man. I've always thought about
this.
They've not got food? Yeah.
They've not got, like, a little kibble?
Yeah, they should. Someone should be feeding them something else, not other dogs.
Don't let the dogs eat dogs.
Yeah. If you have a dog and you're letting it eat other dogs, you're a bad owner.
I'm going to live in a dog eats a nice meal world.
Yes, same.
That's where I live.
Dog eats dog food world for me.
Yes. Not even just a nice meal, like a nice steak or something. You know, like in cartoons or like with Tom and Jerry where like they give the dog like a big steak.
Oh, look at this T-bone right
here.
Yeah,
a big T-bone.
Yeah, but you shouldn't do that you shouldn't give them that all the time. You can give them heart problems, Nathan.
You know, one of my favorite Simpson jokes is Homer is getting chased by some like wild dogs. And he pulls out like, you know, like a cartoonish like string of sausages.
Yeah, does he eat the sausages?
He goes, I know what'll help me. And then he eats the sausages. And then these sausages will give me the perfect energy I need to get away. It's so funny.
That's very good. Simpsons is great for little visual, stupid fucking gags
so
like
great.
That.
It's so great, yeah. They're so good at the little subverting your expectation jokes like that. They're so good. Yeah.
I know what helped. The second you said it and it was Homer Simpson, I was like, I know exactly where this is going.
Of course, but it's great.
So this movie, it's a power struggle relationship dynamic. Sometimes a bit tough to watch. I watched it today, but I think it was a great movie. I literally put it on thinking and knowing nothing about it. And then I was very, very quickly gripped. And Alden Ehrenreich, Phoebe Denver's amazing. It's career best from her, of what little I've seen of her career.
Wow.
No, but Alden Ehrenreich is, like, we've always been saying, he's been underappreciated since day dot. His big introduction with Solo was, like, they even did, like, a fucking press tour smear fucking campaign. This guy needed acting lessons. This guy sucks so bad, he almost ruined the whole film. And he's the best part of the movie. And he's a great performer. He was good in Cocaine Bear. He's good in this movie. Like I said, he goes toe-to-toe with RDJ. But this is the first time I think he's given real meat to chew on. Obviously, Solo is a great movie for him, but it's mostly wrapped up in I'm Han Solo and this is Star Wars. It's a larger world that you have to pay attention to, whereas this, it's very much like a character study that he does.
Fun fact, our very first episode.
Solo. It was, yeah.
Yeah, all those years ago.
Fucking hell.
Two naive little boys starting a podcast journey.
Two young boys.
Yeah.
No, but I've always said I want to see more of Alden, and I saw this movie and I was like, God damn, I need to watch more of Alden. And I wasn't disappointed. Very, very good movie.
He's good. He's good in Cocaine Bear. So is that TikTok boy.
Yeah, then die.
Then die.
Everyone knows him as the then die guy from TikTok.
Yeah, it's great. It's good stuff.
It is good stuff. Nathan, what are you recommending to me and to our lovely listeners?
Lawrence, I am recommending Mean Girls 2020. I think technically three? No, it is 24.
It's 2024,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mean Girls. I recently watched it. It's good fun. I enjoyed it. I think a lot of people, I don't think they realized the musical of Mean Girls existed. And they were like, oh, it's just a remake of the 2004 Mean Girls, but they made it a musical.
Oh, they think they just added songs to make a rehash. Like, yeah.
No, there was a Broadway musical of Mean Girls. I think it was written by Tina Fey as well.
Yeah.
As was the movie. It's great. It's good fun. It's really good stuff. Renee Rapp is great. She's someone the kids enjoy.
What does she sing? I know the name.
I don't know what she sings. I don't know her. But she's
you know, one of the kids on TikTok frequenting her sounds.
No, I'm not. I'm more of a Taylor Swift, Olivia Rodrigo kind of guy.
Hard to not be.
Olivia Rodrigo. Yeah.
Olivia Rodrigo and Taylor Swift collaboration win, is what I say.
Go off, yeah.
So unironically, would fucking be insane.
There's Sabrina Carpenter, is I think a new one that the kids are enjoying as well.
Is she the one that made an album and then made it again for a Christmas version?
I don't know.
Where she's like, I need that Charles Dickens or something.
She does talk about Dick a lot, yeah.
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 Good stuff.
Good stuff. Anyway, no, it's good. It's good. It's a good movie. It's good musical. Good songs.
That's the oldest we've ever sounded. By the way, just realized.
It really is. Yeah, it's not. It's not quite as good as the Broadway version in terms of like the music and stuff. I think it does lose a little bit in translation. But I think it's a good adaptation. I saw someone saying like, because there was a clip of it posted on Twitter, and it's like, and the comment was like, this just looks like an extended TikTok, and like, but like, that's the whole fucking point of it's literally filmed like a TikTok because it's a satire of like Gen Z culture and what's popular and it's very Gen Z, and like TikTok is a part of it and stuff, and it's used well, and I think it's good fun. I enjoy it.
Where can you watch that? Where's that out?
Yeah, I parried it.
Nathan! Nathan, no!
You can pirate it.
It really depends, and audiences will know this in real time. It depends how annoyed I get back listening to your Oppenheimer takes while editing this, if I sense
that. You can keep that. I don't give a fuck. I'd put that in there, man. I don't give a fuck.
Nathan is sailing the seven seas.
I will sail the seven seas. Fucking... If Warner Brothers can just fucking delete a movie, then I can sell the seven seas.
It's so. Got to the point where piracy is actually synonymous with preservation at this point.
Piracy is ethical, as far as I'm concerned, all right?
I mean, so, any money taken from big corporations is ethical.
Exactly.
Do it, that's what I say.
It's activism.
I do it every day for work.
There you go, I'm telling.
No, it's transformative. It falls under copyright use.
I'm calling the BFB. Oh, don't talk to me about copyright, Lawrence. I've been fucking uploading the archive of this podcast onto YouTube. And do you remember there was a streak where I thought it would be funny to end... this went for like 20 episodes or so. But yeah. I always thought it would be funny to sign off with a song. And it was usually a Taylor Swift song. Now I'm fucking dodging copyright claims left, right, and center because of this.
Look, I mean, I warned you in real time.
Look, if you live in Belarus or Russia, I think some videos will be blocked for you.
Sorry, guys.
But it is what it is, you know.
Look, they're on here. You can listen to them on here.
Use a VPN.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Lovely stuff. Right. Thank you very, very much for listening, everyone. If you have enjoyed the show, then please feel free to leave us a little 5-star review. That would be much appreciated. You can do that on your podcast platform of choice, especially Apple, because you can write a little message there. It's always nice to hear what you guys. It's always nice to hear what you guys think of the show. You can also, there's like a Q&A thing on Spotify. It's like, what do you think of this?
Don't worry about that. Instead, yeah. Go to YouTube and go to youtube.com/anotherhappystudios, where we are there now.
The link is in the bio. So yes. Click on that if you like, or just search it like a maniac.
The show notes, no, it's not the bio.
Is it show notes?
Yeah, show notes for podcasts, yes. Mm.
Should know that. We've had a podcast for 3-4 years.
4 years this year.
Yeah. Bloody hell, happy birthday to us.
So, later in the year.
Yeah.
Like September.
Oh, yeah. So not quite. Yeah.
Not quite. No. Okay. And it's our 200th episode this year.
Ooh. I wonder if we'll get a special guest. I actually have not sent that message. We'll find out.
You really should. You want to
put that in early.
Yeah.
Next week, get excited because we're going to be doing this.
Holy fuck, is it? It's a dinosaur. Jesus Christ, what the fuck? Oh my fucking god, fucking dinosaurs. Holy shit, what the fuck?
There we go. Wahoo, it's not Mario.
Wahoo, it's not Mario.
Figure it out. That's another fucking copyright claim right there.
Yeah, basically. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Another Happy Pod. That's where you'll get post reminders for new episodes that go up every single Friday at 10 a.m. It's also a place where you can suggest topics by following the link in our pinned tweet. No promises, but we have already done this year The Thing and Saltburn, which were very, very fun. You can suggest something. We might get to it. We might not. Absolutely no promises. As we are often saying, we have a very booked up schedule, but we have made exceptions in the past. It's not unheard of. Nathan, we have another podcast as well, don't we?
We do, Lawrence.
Sick. What's this?
What?
Tell me about it, Nathan, as if I had no idea.
Oh, okay. Well, you should have said.
I apologize.
It's called Still Got Legs. It's our Doctor Who rewatch podcast, where each week we watch and discuss an episode of Doctor Who. We're about to start series 5. We've finished the David Tennant era now, all wrapped up, and we're moving on to Matt Smith and series 5. So it's going to be a good fun time, a good point to jump on. Again, that's available on YouTube at Another Happy Studios, at Still Got Legs, wherever you get your podcasts. So there you go.
Check it the fuck out. It is a great jumping on point because we're now new showrunner, new doctor, new TARDIS, new costume, new companions, new everything.
New rules.
Yeah. No, no more in jokes. Yeah. All right. We're starting afresh.
Yeah. We are starting afresh. Don't worry about the length of like the last few episodes. All right.
Yeah. It won't be a problem going forward.
We've made some changes. All right. Don't worry about it.
Don't be dissuaded, please.
Yes.
Lovely stuff. Thank you for listening, everyone. We will see you all next week for some big dino boys.
Jurassic Park.
Power Rangers Dino Thunder.
Kind of want to do the Jurassic World movies too.
Are you still going? We still?
Yeah, I'm still going.
Well, we can leave this in. We haven't had another Happy Pod After Dark in a while, have we?
Let's have a little chat, yeah.
The Jurassic World movies?
Yeah.
I think I've seen Jurassic World and that's it.
You've not seen Lawrence. You're doing this is right. We need to figure out where to put them.
We need to find three spaces. What are they? There's Jurassic spots. World, Jurassic World,
Jurassic
what?
World, Jurassic World, the other one, and then Jurassic World Dominion.
Oh, like new Fallen Kingdom or something? Is it
Fallen Kingdom?
That's it.
Okay. Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah, and then New World Order.
No, Dominion.
Dominion.
There's no New World Order. What is this? What is this?
Oh, that's Captain America that I'm thinking.
Yeah. What is this racist rhetoric you're coming up with? I don't like this.
The dinosaurs might have made a new world order. We don't know.
I've seen them, Lawrence.
Yeah, we haven't seen the next one, which is called New World Order.
They're better than the Jurassic Park movies.
I mean, there's an argument to be made. I like the first one quite strongly, and then I think 2 and 3 are like, well, there's some sizzle. We'll see.
I guess we'll talk about it next week. Anyway, yeah, bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening.